in to Athletics Double LC. With Lamar, Lucius, Big League Chew, and my man Clyde, and the governor. You're about to be schooled in all things track and field. This is experience.
Yes, sir.
We are talking past, present, future. Y'all listen up. Let's go.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. We are a much refined, more refined show this week. So I'm going to come at you very even keeled like Oprah and say hello, everyone. Welcome to another Fun Athletics LLC. And then we go ahead and just fall off the rail right there. It's delicious. How are you tonight?
I am well. I am well.
Excellent. Oh, and then I go to the other tile. Lamar, Lecoq, Grande, Cuffins. How are you, sir?
Buenos dias.
Oh my gosh.
Faster next time. That's all.
I tried and it's. Clyde, how are you?
I was enjoying off the rails. We'll see how this goes.
Isn't that how it kind of always is? And then the governor, how are you tonight, sir?
You know, it's that time of year, you know. We're Thanksgiving around the corner. Yeah.
How did it begin?
Exactly. This is by far one of the fastest moving falls I've ever been a part of. And I don't know how we got here, but you know, I've got some work to do for January. Let's put it that way.
Right. And we did happen to beat you in women's basketball tonight. So
this is true. Yeah. Hey, we're on the come up now. Don't sleep on this.
We got
51 votes for top 25 in this past. We're moving up.
And you lost 50 of them tonight by losing to TSU.
No. Football.
Okay.
That's funny. Well, we are going to start off with some sanity because we're going to allow Sir Lucius to do this college football recap and give him his 5 minutes, because that's what we promised him last week, and he's written some notes for us.
Absolutely. And you know, I appreciate you know, the EP being generous enough to give me some time to discuss what we call the college football playoff, and my esteemed colleague Clyde refused to call the playoff, but but you know, we there's been a lot of talk on these tiles about the foolishness, we'll call it,
the shenanigans
and all this stuff, the SEC bias of it all, right? Which I have found comical, and now that I've done what I tend to do, I put my governor hat on the last week. And I did a very deep dive into what is the college football playoff or non-playoff, if you're Clyde.
Playoff?
So, you know, so it was said on these tiles last week that three or four times the SEC has been given an extra team and probably shouldn't have had one. Three or four times, which clearly has never happened. So let me just give you a little revisionist history here so that we can all maybe understand the foolishness that is the college football playoff. So if we go back to year one in 14-15, 4P5 teams champs make it. So there is no issue there. Ohio State was the winner that year. In year two, 15-16, 4P5 champs. Alabama wins the title. The first year that there's only 3P5 champs is the year three, which is 16-17. Ohio State was the fourth team and didn't win the Big Ten. And the two teams that didn't make it, that were P5 champs, were Penn State and Oklahoma, who both had two losses. Ohio State got in because they because Penn State had two losses, right. And so if I'm not mistaken, Penn State beat Ohio State, but then Penn State went on to lose another game, which gave them two losses. But anyway, in the 17-18 season, again, three P5s champions. There's a one loss Alabama team that clearly didn't win the SEC because Georgia did, but the other two P5 champs had two losses.
Did that
clearly out. Did, and, did clearly, that and so at,
play so, in
SEC. Hold on a second. Hold on, cue you get your mute button. Please,
I was asking a question. You're doing
trying, okay. So Alabama had one loss. They didn't win the SEC because Georgia did. I just said that.
Did they play in the championship game?
They couldn't have. Okay, didn't play in the championship game. All right. I know the scenario. But here's the deal. Okay, the other two Power Five champions had two losses. But clearly, adding Alabama wasn't a problem because they won the whole thing.
Those have
okay. Oh yes. Well, okay. By yours, but these are my thoughts, not yours, right? So the next year, three P5 champs in Notre Dame. The next year, four P5 champs. The next year, three P5 champs in Notre Dame again. And then last year, you have two P5 champs. You have the best group of five team, which is Cincinnati, I'm sorry. And then Georgia's at it because they had the close SEC championship game loss to Alabama. And clearly Georgia wasn't a problem because they won the whole thing. So I'm still in doing my research and with my governor hat on trying to figure out how ESPN is picking the four teams to go to the playoff. I'm still trying to figure out all this SEC bias because it's only happened twice in 8 years that an extra SEC team has been added. Twice. Okay, look, you heard me. Twice. Twice in 8 years. Mm-hmm. And both times when the extra SEC team was added, they won the title. So I'm not sure where all this conjecture and foolishness and all the other things that come out of you guys' mouths is relevant. So the talking heads can talk all they want. The narratives can be pushed all at once. At the end of the day, as I tried to tell you guys last week, is this is decided on the field. Because the years where the extra team has been added, they've had one loss, everybody else had two. So there's justification. So anyway, back to this year. Because I'm sure there's going to be a plethora of nonsense is about to be spewed.
Oh, but wait, can we address your very shallow dive, which we like?
Shallow dive?
Well, yeah, because the-
Hold on a second, shallow when I gave you the absolute proof from every single year.
Well, sir.
But again, as you do, instead of listening to what I said, you now want to give me a retort to try to prove your point. Well, We have been listening to your point for 3 years.
Not at all. Not what I want.
The facts are the facts. Reading is fundamental.
I say shallow dive because you looked at since it's been four teams, and this conversation is about
it's been about the college football playoff, and there was no playoff before that.
Okay, that's fine. That's why I said a shallow dive because my conversation has always been about the BCS. And how it was created, and my team.
The conversation every week becomes the chaos that the committee is going to pick the four teams based on what is, but based on what. So see, there you go. Based on what. So, but it's happened twice in 8 years. That's quite the trend, isn't it?
25% of the time. I appreciate
twice in 8 years.
I appreciate the effort.
But again, back to my point. Which you will never want to hear. The 25% of the time that they did it, the team they added won the title. So clearly they belonged. What's that mean?
It means
ocular proof.
It means those things right are not actually exclusive. They don't have anything to do with it.
Exactly. But twice that it happened, you can't erase that. The twice that the SEC team was added to the playoff, where nobody thought they belonged, that team ended up being the best team in the country on the field, which is where the championship is won.
Well, we greatly appreciate Sir Lucius's extra credit and extracurricular work.
But
and we
now we're going to talk about
that's like, what I said. I appreciated the shallow dive.
I'm not going to let you take me there tonight because the shallowness is in your brain, not mine. But I will now allow you to spend the rest of your life thinking that ESPN picks the four teams, because I promise you I'm done talking about it. But as far as this year goes, as I think that it's interesting that the structure of the teams right now, I think Georgia runs the table and they get it done. I think TCU, contrary to popular belief, runs the table, gets it done. I think they're the team of destiny this year. They find a way. I think that, you know, the caveat to the whole situation is the Ohio State-Michigan game. If Michigan goes into Ohio State and loses by 3 points, they're still both going to get it. Now, if Michigan goes into Ohio State and blasts Ohio State, Tennessee's getting it. You know, as long as Tennessee wins out. You know, if Ohio State loses a close game to Michigan, even though they're at home, they still might have a slight edge over Tennessee in getting in, maybe. But I think the whole key to the Big Ten getting two is Ohio State beating Michigan in overtime or by a last second field goal. You know, but in my mind, in the right world, it's Georgia, Ohio State, Michigan, and TCU the way it is now. And if one of those teams slips up, Tennessee gets in. USC has a hard road to get in because they don't control their own destiny anymore.
You got to write that down, Chu. You got to write down what his four is. It's the current four, right? Am I correct?
It's the current four. Depending on the Ohio State Michigan game. Now, if the Ohio State Michigan game is a blowout or not that close, then I think Tennessee gets in over the loser of that game.
So you're saying TCU wins the rest of their games, right?
Absolutely, yes. I believe that.
I'm on board with that too.
But
well, I'm glad you guys are all on board now.
I mean, we're not all on board.
Oh, I know you're not on board. You're never going to be on board because you want the chaos. So
I absolutely want the chaos.
I know. So that's what I said.
So we want chaos so bad that we created ourselves.
No. The games on the field create the chaos. So actually, that's what I root for. So, Governor, to be clear, when you say you're on that page, does that mean you're rooting for TCU to run the table and get in, or you're saying you believe that they will, or both?
I felt like the one loss that was lurking was against Texas. And now that they've beaten Texas, I think they are not going to lose until they get to the tournament.
Fair enough.
I'll say this. TCU's defense is not good enough to hold Texas to 3 points, meaning they played out of their minds and did it, right? The free 7 points they got on the fumble recovery is a joke.
Yeah.
But I will say this, their defense is a whole lot better than most people thought they were.
Absolutely.
Like a whole lot better.
Their DBs and safeties, and this is his, I mean, since, what's his name was there? I mean, that is what, huh? Patterson.
Gary, yeah. Gary.
That is Gary. What they've hung their hat on forever. And it's no different this year. They have some animals in their defensive backfield. It's pretty clear.
And what I think is very interesting, and it was exposed in the Texas game, is that those kids are obviously fearless because they were facing better athletes.
Oh, yeah.
Like the skill position guys at Texas are better athletes and are faster.
NFL ready.
Yes. Than all of the cornerbacks and safeties at TCU. And they were fearless.
Yep.
And I give them credit. They played very, very, very aggressive, sound football.
Yes.
That sounds like a pretty big indictment of coaching staffs or reward to coaching staffs at TCU.
I think I would say it's a big reward of coaching staffs. I think that the TCU coaching staff is coaching their buns off.
Mm-hmm.
I would agree with that. I got to tell you, I forgot how bad the Big 12 was this year. Just recently looking at it, Kansas State's in second place.
See, but before you say another word, I want to say for the record, if y'all remember, you can rewind this tape. I told you Kansas State was the second best team in the conference a month ago. And I told you that Kansas State is far better than people will give them credit for, like you're doing right now. I'm telling you right now, Kansas State is a very good football team. And they got not one, but two very dynamic quarterbacks.
Mm-hmm. Well, that all may be true. I guess we'll be finding that out sooner rather than later. But, you know, they did play earlier in the year, right? And I think TCU won that game at home by like 8-10 points, something like that.
Something like that.
But if the Big 12 rules are still the same way that I believe that they are, then that means Kansas State and TCU are going to have a rematch in the championship game on a neutral field.
As long as they both run the table, yes.
Right. So,
well, TCU is in the championship game.
Sure, but this is about, the conversation is ultimately, can TCU make the Final Four? And in order to do that, they obviously can't lose at all.
Correct.
So, you know, if you're telling me that the Big 12 championship game is going to be TCU versus Kansas State, then as much as I may root for chaos, I don't really think that TCU is going to lose a game. So they'll probably end up in. I don't imagine.
So here's my issue. I know your tone.
Yeah.
Okay. And here's what I'm going to tell you. TCU versus Kansas State is a better game than whatever the Pac-12 championship game ends up.
Well, right now the Pac-12 championship game looks like USC versus Oregon, and I would imagine that that's a better game.
First of all, USC is almost certainly going to lose to UCLA because they fumble the bag every time. Since Pete Carroll's been gone, like.
Well, okay. See, this is one of these football conversations that really have nothing to do with anything, right? Like,
right.
Like Pete Carroll and his time there and those athletes have absolutely nothing to do with Lincoln Riley and these athletes.
Facts. That's facts. And honestly, Lincoln Riley's ability to coach has almost nothing to do with the team that he currently has, because it's an assemblage of kids he stole from Oklahoma and kids he didn't even recruit at USC. And so it's a hodgepodge, and it's definitely not one of his teams.
And they're doing a hell of a job. So listen, can USC lose to UCLA? Of course they can. Because UCLA is a good football team and it's a rivalry game and, you know, there are no rules, right? So whatever's going to happen is going to happen. The Pac-12 has done what it has always done, which is eat itself. It's almost impossible. It is impossible to go undefeated in the Pac-12. It's been done one time legitimately since 2000.
Wow.
One.
Yeah.
One time.
I mean, numbers don't lie on that one.
Okay. So it's not a surprise that no one made that route happen. So TCU should, by all evidence, run the table. And if they do, they should be in the Final Four by right. I will say that they should be in there. Do I believe that they're just a lock to be in there if they do that? No, because again, if LSU makes the championship game and wins it, they're going to be in. Georgia will be in. The Big Ten champion undefeated will absolutely be in. And the conversation will be, is TCU undefeated with the championship truly the one of the best four teams over Tennessee? And you know that's going to be the conversation.
And I'm telling you, it won't. Look, that is not going to be a conversation, because TCU, look, their own ranking system is what is going to lock TCU in. If they win the rest of their games and they're the Big 12 champion, they will be in. I'll bet all of the money.
I would hope so, but that wouldn't even be a conversation if it was Texas or Oklahoma. They'd just be in. It wouldn't even be a part of a conversation.
I will not argue with you, because that is probably true.
So,
but it's a conversation for people like ourselves that don't matter, that have no voice.
It's a conversation for the people that do matter. They're happy.
No. How would you know that?
Bro, they step out and tell you that they're having.
Hold on a second. Those people aren't in the room.
The people in the room.
You know, hold on a second. Hold on a second. I want you to act as if I never opened my mouth, because I'm not going to do this. I'm not.
You can't go ahead.
Talk. No. I'm not trying to have it anyway. because I just gave you great examples of the fact that this is done the right way, but you insist on having it your way, so have it your way. So I don't want to have
it. It is a fact that every single year, whoever is the head of said committee steps out every week and tells you what the people in the room were having the conversations about. And what me and Lamar are currently discussing are the realities of how those conversations go, because they've talked about how those conversations go every single year. So in a couple of weeks, when that exact conversation is reported out and I say, I told you that's what they were talking about, you're going to look at me and act like I didn't say it. So
no, trust me, I will not do that. See, I'm not you. I won't do that. I will admit when I'm wrong every time. What I won't do, what I won't do is I won't spin the narrative of the conversation so I could be right again. If I'm wrong, I'm wrong.
There's nothing to spin.
Exactly. You're right. There's nothing to spin here. Nothing at all.
All right.
All right.
Well, that was an incredible 5 minutes that turned into 20. But it was good. I like it. Listen, a spirited debate is worthwhile. I like it.
So I guess this might be another spirited debate then. Because talking about the most improved athlete of 2022, different from, so I'm going to jump before everybody else jumps in the audience and says, we already said this, different from the breakout athlete, those who made a name for themselves, rather those who did better for themselves in 2022.
Oof.
There's so many ways you can go with this.
I know.
That's why I like this question.
Are we doing separate for men and women?
I mean, I think we should.
Yes.
Okay.
We should. So Lucius, would you like to do the women or the men first, sir? You don't have to go first. I'm asking for some direction.
I mean, just as a gentleman, ladies should always go first.
I just wanted to hear you say it, sir. All right.
I'll jump in. It most improved, as I would define improved, it seems pretty cut and dry to me. It has to be Toby Amazon.
Did she get better this year?
Yeah, marginally. You know, just a few improvements. From a talented person who was always in the mix to the gold medalist and blows the world record away. Got to be most improved to me. I don't really know who else I would throw.
Yeah, I mean, listen, obviously nobody's going to be like, Clive's an idiot. I mean, that's a good pick. It's not the only
one. I'm sure that's said at least once every week.
See, improvement for me is more of a statistical thing versus an honors thing. And I don't know how, and this may be construed as a bit of a homer pick, but when you improve by 500 and some change points in the multi-event and you become one of the top 10 or 15 females in the world in the 400 hurdles, you've never done it before. If that's not most improved, I don't know what the hell most improved is. So I'm going with Anna Hall.
These are great answers. I knew this was going to be quite spirited and very good. Governor, because I know your answers is going to be flowery and tremendous. I would like for you to because my answer is going to be controversial and I'm okay with it. It's very difficult to be the best person in the world and then be the most improved.
Wow.
But I'm going to say this.
Wow. Okay.
A year ago, it was a race between Sid and Dalila. A year later, it's a race between Sid over hurdles and the best 400 meter runners in the world, flat. Like, I know my answer is not necessarily the best answer, right? Because I think that the best answers have been given. But I do think that sometimes people don't give credence to how hard it is to improve on great. Right? Like the because the increments are not, they're not as big. Right? But I'll say this, like if Toby Amasan ran 12:09 next year, like that's a huge improvement. I don't give a damn.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm just saying this. The Sid that we saw this year is way better than the Sid we saw last year. Way better.
Okay. You drop the mic.
I mean, that's my answer. I don't know if it's a, I don't know if it's a mic drop, but it is my answer.
Well, I as I was thinking about the answer to this question, I mean, Toby Amasan popped into my head. I mean, you can't quantify what she did from 21 to 22. That is just insane, you know, and the debate may rage on and whatever about what happened on that magical day in Eugene, Oregon. But look, I mean, anytime you break the world record in the 100 hurdles, I mean, you just call it what it is. But I thought about something and I immediately started to do some research. Now, does anyone know what Paulito ran last year?
48 high.
Okay, so let's she ran 49:20.
20, okay.
In August of 21. She was 51:88 in 2020. And 48:99 in Zurich. Okay. So I thought about those two young ladies from the Dominican Republic and what they were able to do this year and how. I mean, I don't know that it's even being talked about enough what those two young ladies are doing. But yeah, I have to give it to Toby Amasan. There's no question in my mind that she has to be the most improved, you know? And I mean, well deserved. I mean, I can't wait to see what next year holds. So
I like the Anna Hall argument because it's the multis, right?
Yep. And
there's so many areas to improve.
Yep.
And the 400 hurdles. I think that part gets lost sometimes.
Right. No, you right. I was just about to say that. You throw in the 400 hurdles caveat into that, and I think it's the best out of the box case to be made. But at the end of the day, and I mean this in the most respectful way possible, it's at a lower level, right? She's a world-class athlete, but the highest things that she accomplished are not on the world stage of high yet. So if you, yes, sir.
She was third at the world championship, sir.
I understand that. That's my point, right? If she'd been the gold medalist,
That's different. You right. Said she's not at the highest stage. I don't know what stage you want to run.
I mean the top.
She wasn't the gold medalist,
okay. Right? If she did everything she did and somehow managed to eke out the gold medal, I think that's a runaway argument. I was going to ask you a question because I'm not going to pretend like I kept track of the multis. I was there and I watched it and it was fun. How close was she to the gold medal? I feel like there was a gap there.
No, there was definitely a gap there.
Yeah.
Okay. And so
the gold medalist doesn't play fair. She doesn't.
and so
we have to learn to not play fair with her, but she doesn't play fair.
Right. If a year from now, Anna Hall very well may be the gold medalist, and I wouldn't even be shocked. Mm. And she won't be entertaining the 400 hurdles at the pro level, I don't imagine. Maybe y'all are crazy down there. Maybe she will. Who knows?
That's like,
who knows? right?
I mean, she's out here winning handstand contests right now, so like
exactly. Do it, do it.
But I mean, 12:42 to 12:12.
Yeah.
Plus the goal. Yeah.
Look, I like I said, I mean, I'm not going to argue against Toby. And my pick was clearly a bit of a homer pick.
Yeah, but our job is to give outside the box answers because, look, the whole reason people watch this show is because they want to know stuff they didn't already know.
Yeah. See, the thing, I'm basing mine on, like I said, just overall improvement. And 3/10 is a lot. But 500 points in a multi is a ton.
It is.
And when you take on a new event and your slowest time of the year was 55 low, I think. Mm-hmm. Like she opened up at 55.4 and never ran 55 again.
So taking another deep dive into this, and I can't help it. Now, Kofo, guess what her PB was coming into 2022 in the 400?
No clue.
57. I'm just kidding.
52
She ran 49.80.
Jeez.
Okay. Well,
there you go.
Femke Bol went from 50.37 last year to 49.44 this year. The shoes? What are we talking about here?
I feel bad for Femke Bol. Femke Bol has the worst birthday of all time.
Oh my.
Oh, goodness. No, she doesn't. She doesn't have the worst birthday of all time. She has a terrible birthday. Listen, every single heptathlete that competed in Jackie's era has the worst birthday ever.
Exactly. Absolutely.
You can't beat a cyborg.
No. No.
Oh my gosh.
I'm saying athletically, listen, for the 80s, right? Like, Jackie's a cyborg.
Yeah.
Like, look, 1260 something was really, really fast then, and she ran that. Mm-hmm. In heps.
Did run that.
Like that's not
720s, 730s, 740s.
Yeah.
I mean, yeah, okay.
Yeah. So
no big deal. All right, switch over to the men's lean.
Woo.
Woo wee.
This one's hard. Like this one's really, really.
I definitely think it's more difficult. I'm gonna go pseudo Homer, and totally ready for one of y'all to change my mind. But I'm gonna go pseudo Homer and say, from 48.80 to 47.39 and a medal, I'm gonna roll with Trevor Bassett.
Yep.
Shout out to my man Ernie Clark.
I'm gonna roll with Trevor as well. With a shout out to. Champion Allison from 45.5 to 43.70.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yep. Let's not even talk about what he went through indoors.
Yeah.
Right. Off an injury. Right.
Okay. I mean.
Yeah. See, and indoors he went from 45.8 to 45 flat.
Yeah.
So, yeah. So no, he had a heck of a year, but I mean, it's hard to for me anyway to argue against Trevor because Lord. And it was just the manner. He just, you know, he has what you have to have in order to compete in that event. You have to be fearless. You know, you have to have the ability to come off the turn and be in triple lactate state and just put your head down and go and get to the finish line. So he has that.
See, it's very interesting because I haven't given my answer by any means, but like, it's hard to pick between who improved more, Trevor Bassett or DeSantos, ooh, right? Because it's the same event and it's a similar kind of massive growth from one year to the next, but one guy won the gold medal.
Wasn't DeSantos 46 seconds last year?
He was. Yep. Yeah,
absolutely. He was third at the Olympic Games.
He was the third guy.
Oh, he was the third guy under 47. Yeah.
When the camera,
I guess for me, it's not necessarily
didn't he break the previous 46.78 barrier as well last year?
I thought he ran 46.90 something because I did forget he ran under 47.
I thought I thought it was 4670 something. I could be wrong. But the governor's going to tell us here in a second. So go ahead.
Yeah. And again, I haven't given my answer, but it definitely is that's a difficult one, right? Between the two of those, because those two guys are like, it's hard to improve by that much in anything.
Yes.
You know, it's just.
So here's the argument for Dos Santos. He went from 4672 to 4629.
Right.
But he did it completely differently now. He's 12 stepping the whole, you know, he's doing what he does. Now here's
he also took down the guy that broke the world record the year before.
Mm-hmm.
I understand, but listen.
I can't give him that.
The game happens when it happens.
I hear you. I hear you. He absolutely won the race, and Warholm isn't making any excuses.
Right.
So I'm not going to make an excuse for him. I want to see them race this year.
Yeah, I mean, and that's going to be fun. I will not
say he took anything from Warholm until he takes it from Warholm.
But I'm going to say this. My answer also, and I hate when we all pile on, but at the end of the day, like, this one is just, you can't really deny it if you get into it and understand the sport. Like, what Trevor Bassett did this year is, if you wrote it out at the beginning of the year, right, this is what's going to happen, and then you handed it to somebody and was like, read this, they would, almost everybody would look at you and go, nope, not going to happen, too much.
We're forgetting that Trevor got a silver medal in the open 400.
This is my point, is that I was actually there and watching that young man, like, just slay dragons indoors in the open 400, an event that's not his event, right? Yeah, he's good at it. He's good at the quarter, but I don't think anybody saw silver medalists at indoor world championships out of him. And to take that momentum and then carry it back into his specialty, and still, as Sir Lucius says, very eloquently put, like, run into that ridiculously deep lactate stays and be like, nah, we good. winning feels better than this pain, pain feels bad. And that's just, listen, anybody who's paying attention understands that there are four people to be reckoned with in the 400 hurdles on the men's side now. It's not a three-headed monster anymore. It is a four-headed monster.
Are we missing a certain Mr. Knighton? Like, that's kind of ridiculous too. That is some cartoon improvement right there, to go from 1984 1949.
And he medaled as well.
Yes, he did.
Mm-hmm. I mean, I was going to mention him, but I didn't want to.
Oblique Seville goes from 1004 to 1086.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah,
nice.
To
986. To 986, sorry. Rosser goes from 4881 to 4759.
You know, the funny part is if you're just
talking Morris about, did a great job with that dude.
He did, absolutely.
If you're just talking about empirical improvement, I think Sir Lucius actually hit the nail on the head. I think it's Champion Allison.
Yeah.
Right. If you're just talking about empirical improvement, right? So like, if you put everybody's performances on the beloved point chart, right? And then you put their new performances on the point chart, I'd be willing to bet you the Champion Allison's growth number is largest. I hope that made sense. Like, just literally, just by the numbers.
Anyway, yeah.
Just literally by the numbers, I think Champion Allison actually improved by the most of anybody.
See, and that's one of those things where, like, you know, watching the day-to-day progress of it, like, when he, you know, he had the injury at the indoor championships, because I thought, and I told you guys this, he was on his way to running 44 seconds in Birmingham. Mm-hmm. There was no doubt about that. And then the injury happened, and then the first, like, he was in the pool for like 2.5 weeks. And the first day back out, I'm like, what am I watching here? Like, this is not supposed to be happening. And like, he was just so driven. Like he was putting himself through the ringer. He's like, coach, I have to be better outdoors. And I'm like, well, you keep that up, you're going to be, right? So, and then guys, when he, the first time we ran him, he split 43.6 on the relay. And I'm like, it's on. So, you know, it was just great to watch that. And, you know, the people that know Champion is he's just such a humble, hardworking kid, young man, I should call him, because he's not a kid. And that just made it a pleasure to watch. And I think, I don't know Trevor Bazett like that, but Trevor appears to be the exact same way. You know, like, this is hardworking, humble. I will, you know, take your heart out of your chest if I have to, kind of guy, you know? Because I believe in my heart that if other people in that event area had that same ish to them, the event would get even better. Because I mean, because Russell's not going away. He's not. You know, obviously Rye's not going away. And I agree with Clyde that Warholm is not happy about what happened last year at all.
Have you been seeing his videos? He's been posting some videos that I don't know.
Man's a psychopath.
Yes, he is. Yes, this is going to go to another level. I mean, so again, just taking a deep dive, just popping up some things. Noah Bibby from Mauritius, 200 meters, went from 21.46 in 2021 to 1989.
Okay, jeez. So we're not going to have that conversation. We're not going to have that conversation.
Oh my gosh.
We're just not going to have that conversation.
Okay. And it's not like he, you know, that was a blip. He was 21.37 in 2020, 22.07 in 2018. So he went from, in 2018, he ran 10.98. In 2022, he ran 10.03.
Next.
Oh my gosh. All right.
You will not bait me into that.
Before
I'm going to swim
there.
Right by that hook.
Before we get there. Oh. A question of personal reflection for you all as professionals. What is the one thing that you were told, realized, or learned that changed your perspective on your professional development?
Yeah, I mean, I'll go first. I mean, it's really easy for me. And I think I've mentioned this before in other conversations. My first year here at Florida, get to the National Indoor Championships, and I'm all bright-eyed because I got a guy in the 16 to 200 who, I mean, in the back of my mind, I think he's got a chance, but realistically, I know he's probably about to get drugged, right? So, but our throws coach and the number one assistant at the time was Jerry Clayton, and Jerry Clayton said to me, "I want you to stay in the warm-up area." Now, as a first-time coach, I'm like, I want to watch the meet. He goes, "You can watch the meet on the monitors downstairs. I need you to stay down there so you can see what kind of athletes we need to win."
Wow.
That's game changer. Game changer. So thank you very much, my good friend, Jerry Clayton.
Look how well that went.
You changed my life, buddy.
Now there's going to be an overflow of coaches in the warm-up area and nobody on track. I'm going to have the whole entire rail to myself. Exactly. I'm just kidding.
I will, I'll jump in there next. Because this was without question a humongous game changer for me. I'm going to piss a whole lot of coaches off who don't like to be honest with themselves, and I don't care. If you listen, this will make you better. When you are charged with coaching a group of people and you take them to a track meet, if one or two of them do really well, that's awesome. If one or two of them do really poorly, that may or may not be them. But if half or more of your group do poorly, that is not on the kids, that is on you. and you need to own it. Maybe even own it directly out loud to them. But get it, but go home, reflect, get it right. And everybody will be better off the following week, cycle, whatever it is. But I think as a young coach, I wasn't necessarily a blamer, but you know, I kind of always felt like I was doing a really good job with everybody, you know, and two or three kids would really do well that week. And six or seven kids, just not quite what was supposed to happen. And, you know, they were a little flat or whatever it is. And my first inclination was to wonder what they were doing. Like whether they were drinking or partying or doing this, that, and the third. And they may have been doing those things. But I had someone pull me aside and say, you know, if more than half of them don't perform up to the level that you expected, then that level of expectation was not put together properly by you. And it changed my life. It absolutely changed my life as a coach. And if I could pass that information along, which I hope I just did, to anybody else, they would definitely be that. Like if mistakes are made, own them, get better.
I know the governor's gonna have a better answer than me. When I was told that we were gonna do this question, I really wanted to come up with something that I thought would be like super profound. And I found myself upset that the thing that kept coming back to me, because this is about development in the profession, right? Is that I can't care more than kids. And I used to have like a really, really, really big problem with that, right? Like as an athlete, I was pretty even keel. Like I never got too high or too low on any of my individual performances. I was able to focus and do what I needed to do and perform when I needed to perform. But when I first started coaching, I would like live and die emotionally with the performances of kids. And it was driving me crazy. And at, you know, there isn't any one particular person that I can give true credit for that, for this realization. But at some point I realized that, you know, they're not me. I can't want them to be me or expect them to be me. I can't care more about what they're doing on a daily basis and how it's getting done than they do. And I have to find different ways to reach them and make them care more, right? So that was mine. And it absolutely changed my perspective on a lot of things. And ultimately, I think made me better at what I do and my execution of it. But yeah, that's mine. I can't care more than they do.
Yeah, I would say that for me, the when I tell my story to young athletes, to young coaches, young people that are trying or thinking about getting into the coaching game, I often go back to the 6 years that I sat and just watched. And while I was trying to make up my mind whether or not I wanted to be a coach, and watching some of the very best in the world do their job. And, you know, I mean, when I started out at in Gainesville, I'm sitting there as an athlete and watching these athletes through a professional's mind. And, you know, in some cases, I'm like almost chuckling to myself, you know, because I can see them actually trying to execute and knowing that they're not getting it right. And yeah, I mean, sometimes I'm just laughing. I'm actually talking to them and inside I'm just going, wow, this is kind of hilarious. But when I remember asking Coach Paff, I remember asking Dan, I said, hey, you know, what is it, you know, what is it going to take to do this job? And he said, pick up a rake, pick up a shovel, pick up a hurdle, start from the bottom, start learning, start watching the grounds crewmen when they come in and they take care of the track, start looking around at the people that are doing all the groundwork to make sure a day of practice gets done smoothly, appreciate it, and then you could think about being a coach. And I was like, wow, okay. And again, taking it with a grain of salt, you know, start looking around, and then next thing you know, I'm like, holy crap, like there is a lot of work before these athletes come out on the track for their session. There's a lot of stuff that has to happen. There are cones, there are hurdles, there's rakes, shovels, you know, stuff has to be measured out. You know, by the time Mouse came out to practice, okay, like there was a bunch of stuff that had to be done. And thankfully, I was able to see it for what it was, appreciate it, and then learn how to be a servant to my athletes and completely flip the switch on being a taker and just trying to take all I can just for me to move into a situation where I am giving of myself to the point where it's, I mean, let's call it what it is. I mean, it's unhealthy what we do. The amount of energy that we spend and the amount of stuff and the amount of stuff that we soak in and the pain that we see every day. I mean, yeah, I mean, that's not, you can't truly describe what it is that we do on a daily basis for young men and young women. But yeah, that period of time between working in Gainesville and Tallahassee, I needed every bit of it to truly appreciate, you know, what this profession is. Big League, I want to hear yours.
Right.
There are so many different pieces, like layers to it in regards to just, I know personally my personal development or professional development because of the different levels I've hit, you know, the milestones in regards to high school coaching and getting into collegiate and then going through the divisions. But the most resounding that's kind of just lingered over all of it is I can't expect anybody to believe in me if I don't believe in myself. And I can't negative talk myself and I can't negative sell myself at any given point because that just, it doesn't do anything. I can't be the strongest person I can be if I don't even believe it myself. So, you know, during the interviewing process, during daily practices, during all of those moments where I have to be confident in my own thought, I have to be that. And so, you know, sometimes I don't think it myself, but there's a thin line between arrogance and confidence. And as long as we operate in that confidence versus the arrogance, we're going to be successful. So I had to learn that very quickly in order to get better. And it's, there's a literal day that it happened. And from that day on, I've not looked back. So there's others. And that's, those are the level two conversations and convention conversations. But awesome. That was something that I think everyone should hear a little tidbits and be able to reflect on their own professional development and how to keep that going. So back to the fun stuff. Lamar, would you rather?
Clearly.
Would you rather be camouflage or not?
I would rather you represent.
Oh my gosh. Anyways, can't be seen. All right, you ready, sir?
Yes, ma'am.
Okay. Would you rather have pumpkin cheesecake or pumpkin pie?
Well, there is no question about this. We had a argument in this house yesterday about the merits and the shenanigans of pumpkin pie. So yes, without question, pumpkin cheesecake, because pumpkin pie is pretty awesome. Much never going to be eaten by me.
Anyways, all right. Would you rather go skiing or ice skating?
That's an interesting one. I mean, I guess I'll say ice skating because I can ice skate and like to ice skate, but I think I would like to learn how to ski. I just never got a brother up on top of a mountain, so.
Oh my God.
It's the facts.
Would you rather relive a day in your past or relive tomorrow?
Ooh. Can I make changes in the day in the past?
No, it's reliving. Oh. It's reliving.
You know, I'm not really a go backwards guy. So if I can't make any changes or adjustments, I'll go with I'll relive tomorrow. I hope it's good.
Would you rather play cornhole or spikeball?
Oh, there's no question. I would rather play cornhole because there will be no torn ACLs. I've seen spikeball between four professional baseball players, and I was 100% sure that there was going to be at least three careers ended that day. So if spikeball is amazing, but yeah, no, I'm going with cornhole.
When you're coaching, would you rather a windy day or a rainy day? Coaching, don't think about athletes.
Is the wind blowing up the runway in the pole vault?
Don't think about the athletes. Literally just said that.
Yeah, but I still have to. That's I guess a windy day.
Okay. Would you rather have a fine point pen or a medium point pen?
Fine point.
Okay. Those are all my questions.
Anybody trying to write with no damn small sponge?
I love medium point pens. That was a question for me.
Of course you do. I'm going to go with a fine point pen. Thank you. For the record, Sir Lucius, I think she's bled some of her shenanigan questions from you into my my foray this week.
Not even close, sir. Yeah, I do appreciate her attempts to do better. But no, the shadiness of the questions towards me have been well documented.
That's pretty true.
So I would like to know, as a coach, would you rather coach a decathlete that has to run very fast in the 1500 to win? I'll make it a lower level, the NCAA title. Or would you rather have to win the 4x4 to win the NCAA team title?
So which one of those people would I rather coach?
Would you rather have to put the guy on the line to get him to win the 1500? I mean, run well in the 1500, PR to 1500 to win an NCAA title, or have to put 4x4 together at the meet to win the meet and win the NCAA title? And you won.
Those would both be awesome, not going to lie. I guess I sort of kind of had this one. I'll take the 1500 guy. Because there's some places mentally you have to go into somebody else's head to get them to do that. But both would be awesome. Let's be clear.
Got it.
Let's see. Rather be in jail for 5 years.
Anything else.
Or be in a coma.
Anything else you say. What'd you say? Would I rather be in jail for 5 years or what?
You're in a coma for 10 years.
I'd definitely take the coma. Not even fucking close. Friggin' close.
In theory, he's still safe in the coma.
Listen, I'm going to tell you, listen. If you have never been in a jail, I've never been to jail as a, you know, active participant, but I have definitely been in a jail more than once. There is nothing about that place that makes you say, yeah, I can hang out here for 5 years. Nothing.
All right, sir. Would you rather watch TCU blow this opportunity in college football?
Oh my God.
Or would you rather watch Tom Brady get number 8?
That's really your question?
That's my question. Because I know you don't want to see either one happen.
Oh,
so which one would torment you more?
And for the record, neither one of them is going to happen. So you're good.
I mean, I kind of am in agreement with Sir Lucius. TCU's not even my football team. Clemson is, and they lost. But I don't want to see TCU lose just because so many people around the country are rooting for it to happen. So, I don't hate Tom Brady. My son, who's a Jets fan, hates Tom Brady.
I bet he does.
He hates Tom Brady. I could see Tom Brady win number 8. I don't see a scenario where it happens, but I could see it. It wouldn't like that. I would definitely choose that.
Got it. That was a fun round of Would You Rather.
Yes.
All right. So closing it out, we'll bring back some heartbeat props to recognize some people and give them a quick little shout out for surviving and doing things nicely, the right way, however you want to put it. Shout out to the most recent Level 2 Jumps class who just closed out their little 6-week session last week. We explored a new platform, a new medium. Yeah, so you didn't even know. Level 2 in 6 weeks. So we met every Sunday for 4 hours for 6 weeks. And it was a new, not platform, but vehicle as to see how it would work out. So this was our pilot. And some liked, some didn't. Some thought it was plentiful and some thought it was missing things. But kudos to you all for sticking to it and making it work for you.
Ooh. Heartbeat props to the University of Virginia.
I don't think much more needs to be said. Sad, senseless. Just hope that they can heal from this. And that's all I have to say.
Yeah, you definitely should have gone last.
I'm co-signing with the governor on that. As one of the victims was actually a very good friend of one of the athletes on my team. So
really,
oh, man,
yeah. So I'm gonna co-sign with the governor on that.
Oh, go ahead, sir.
I don't even feel like I feel like talking after that.
I'm sorry.
It needed to be said.
You can attach yourself to that one, and I'll try to give you a more positive one on the way out.
Listen. You know, people don't. I wish I could forget certain things, but people don't pay close attention to certain things. Like the state of Virginia has had some very, very tough incidents happen on college campuses.
Yeah.
You know, like when the thing happened in Blacksburg, you know, the introduced us all to, you know, active shooter on campus, right? I had a kid on my campus for an official visit who was from Blacksburg, Virginia, whose brother was at school, right? He ended up, we had to get a special dispensation from the NCAA because he had to stay on our campus for 3 extra days because they wouldn't let him fly home. Mm. And so, you know, look, the people of Virginia are incredibly resilient, and I know that they will unfortunately get through this. But this kind of stuff is just so, so senseless and sad. And it just speaks to just, like, I get, like, people feel like they have this birthright to, like, you know, like, gun laws, and it's our right to carry guns, and it's our right to be able to get guns whenever we want. But the simple fact of the matter is, like, if the guns aren't available, like, this stuff is just harder to do.
Yeah.
It's just harder to do.
Yep.
It's really difficult to kill 3 people without a gun.
Yep.
And so, you know, I mean, obviously my heart goes out to all of the people in, you know, Wahoo Nation, and, you know, the fact that they canceled their last home game, and, you know, there's just nothing but pain for them right now, and no way to heal it anytime soon.
Yep.
Well said by all. And I definitely agree with that. I knew somebody would, if not all of us, would address that horrible issue of the week. As you all know, I'm a big political junkie.
Oh man, that's an understatement.
And honestly, there hasn't been a lot in American politics to feel very great about recently, but man, I'm sitting here very happy after the midterm elections,
mm-hmm.
because coast to coast, up and down, east, west, and in the middle, the election deniers got destroyed.
Yep.
And if nothing else, that means that America's slightly better than I was giving them credit for. And that's actually very, very inspiring to see. It proves that people still care about the idea of democracy. And anytime sanity rears its head and balances some things back out, you know, to me, that's a moment to cheerlead and smile and be happy about. And understand, you know, for me, I'm very much with what I consider, you know, an independent voter. I literally voted for both sides of tickets in this election, both sides of issues in this election in my little part of the world. And it took, you know, left-leaning, right-leaning, centrist-leaning people to be able to pull this off and keep all of those people away from, you know, stints of power. Still got a long way to go. Still got a lot of shenanigans to extinguish out of our political discourse. But the midterm elections could have been a monstrous disaster, and they actually turned out to be pretty damn positive for the country. So I'm happy about that. Definitely heartbeat props out to Virginia. And if you live in Georgia.
Oh, if you live in Georgia.
Please.
December 6th.
Like, please.
You know.
We don't need this.
I don't know if anybody else listens to Steve Harvey, but I'll say this. Like, Steve Harvey's take on the audacity of the Republican Party to try to win us over with the brown face of Herschel Walker, his take on that was absolutely brilliant. Mm-hmm. It was visceral, it cut to the bone, but it was honest, and it was just, and it just literally called it what it is, right? Because I mean, at the end of the day, like, look, there were better white candidates, brown candidates, hell, there was probably a better purple candidate than Herschel Walker.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's a very, very sinister plot that they are putting before us in Georgia, and I'm gonna need that to it's gone on way longer than it should have gone on. I'm gonna need to go. Y'all go ahead and handle that. But you know what, sir? I'm sorry. I got to slide one more in there on our way out, since you brought up a very famous comedian with a great take on things. If you have not taken the time to watch the full clip of Dave Chappelle hosting SNL this past weekend,
do yourself a favor.
Listen, greatness should be celebrated in any form. And that man is in a bag right now that you just can't believe. Like, when I say perfect routine, perfect.
There was perfect. A mic drop at the end and it was perfect.
Yes.
So appreciate Dave Chappelle while he is at
his. We have him, yes.
Wow, all righty. Well, another fun episode concluded. Wrap it up, put a bow on it, and you'll see in a couple days. So everyone have a good evening. See you all next week. Bye.
When the lights come on, the road just gets running. When the lights come on, opponents mess the plumbing. Heard you like it warm, hot knife the butter. Truth hit them hard, knock them off that rebuttal. Tsunami, tidal wave to your puddle. Tough love, punch you in the arms, little brothers. Athletics, double OC, there's no others. Track and field's pacing, we're peeled to go further. Hey, Wiley, Coyote, it's Roadrunners. Feels like you know us, you've been with us the whole summer. If not for this quarantine, these four corners wouldn't be here, but we're here, so start learning. You gotta earn your stripes, gotta get your scars. Show you how to fight, but show us who you are. You lack experience, but still you wanna talk. And who is actually talking to you? Circle's kinda small. Heads prevail when the backbone's strong. Gotta keep it coming, no, it won't last long. Pass or fail, then sell the sad song. And if you don't check yourself, then that's wrong. Just trying to give you the real that you asked for. So why you keep cutting us off to ask more? We put it in slow-mo, but you fast forward. Athletics, LLC, the task force.